For May the 2nd, 2014, we talk about whether or not video games need a stadium, a little bit about Elder Scrolls Online, and we ask you, do you think that E3 is still relevant? Welcome to the 59th level. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meismith.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Hey, guys, thanks for showing up.
No problem.
Yeah, I'm sorry about last week. Things got nuts.
same here.
Lots of last-minute stuff came up. So, we hate leaving you for a week, but we know you're going to be here when we come back.
We've got you tied up in the basement, so.
yeah. Yes, this is a 10-person audience. I'm looking over at all of you right now and spraying you with a hose. No.
So, everybody laugh now.
I just pull the light. Oh, man. Yeah. So that got really weird really quickly. So let's pull out from that. You guys, it astounds me what I get paid to do at work.
Because, what do you do at work?
how much work is it? No. On the day this comes out, I will have performed for the first time in several years. I would say maybe even 8 years. A barbershop quartet number.
Oh, hey!
So I don't know if there will be video of it because it hasn't happened yet as of this recording. But it's a day in the life.
I assume you'll be in full garb.
You know what? I lobbied for seersucker and straw boaters, but it's way too expensive for like a one-off thing. So,
yeah. Were you the bass?
Yes. Although I don't like being typecast as the bass. I'm a pretty good tenor one.
Yeah. Okay. I didn't you sing tenor in like in high school?
Dog, I did everything.
Oh, did you? Okay.
What didn't I sing?
Oh, man. Guys, we got some news about the network.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just real quick before we go in. First off, Dennis, tell people about the dadding.
Yeah. So this has been, I think, alluded to a couple different times on a couple different shows.
And then Cole didn't follow through.
Well, so. No, it had nothing to do with you. It had to do with me waiting for the logo for the show. And I have a friend who's an amazing artist, volunteer her work for free to do the logo, which is awesome, like professional grade work for free. But of course, that means you can't really set any deadlines. Yeah. So that just, you know, I'm absolutely grateful for it. I love it. And but that was kind of what I was waiting for to go up, because we do things right. We have logos here.
I just want to throw this out here, by the way. I would not actually hang a kettlebell from your babies. I think that would end poorly.
It's asking for trouble.
Yeah. So literally, though, the first thing that we ever bought for our child-to-be, I guess, was a 1-pound kettlebell. So, yeah. Not saying I'm going to hang it over the child. I'm just saying that does exist.
Saying there's a reason they say CrossFit is a cult.
Yeah. So for more wonderful insights, obviously it came out on the show. I think people know I'm going to be a dad in about 3 months here. Holy shit, 3 months here. Yeah. I just finished fixing the literal hole through the floor of my nursery, so I feel at least semi-accomplished there. But I've started a blog to kind of chronicle my grand adventure into fatherhood, and then also just to kind of capture thoughts on fatherhood in general. I think that, you know, what it means to be a dad is very different than what it meant even 5 years ago, and there's a lot of change happening there. So it's kind of my personal journal. I would not be able to hold myself accountable, so hopefully putting it out there will help hold me accountable to journal, keep these thoughts going, and hopefully it'll provide entertainment to at least a couple people as well.
Yeah. So if you have any thoughts or feedback on that, there are the comment forms. It's at duckfeed.tv/thedadening. Read those posts. They're very good. And leave comments so that Dennis can see them.
Mm-hmm.
Other network news. In addition to that, we are doing a bunch of different things. Some of you are hearing this probably a day early, because we have started a Patreon for the entire network. For those of you who are not aware of what Patreon is, you know, it's picking up some steam. So imagine Kickstarter being for, you know, projects, things that are going to happen once, mostly products and things of that sort. So like, oh, we are making an iPhone doodad or some kind of special small wallet or an iPhone doodad that is also a small wallet. That is all Kickstarter is. and that's cool because it gives people an opportunity to say, hey, I've got a couple dollars and I want this thing to exist. That doesn't work especially well for the kinds of things that we do. Enter Patreon, which gives people the ability to say, I want to give you a dollar or so or more or three or five or ten per month or per thing that's put out. And we're opting for a month. So this is across the entire network. And what this does is it gives you the ability to give us money in exchange for a couple of Kickstarter-esque extras. The big one I'm going to say right now is if you donate at the $3 per month level, you get early access to each episode. So roughly a day early, unless there's some kind of huge emergency or whatever. You're going to get those. And what that does is that money goes towards equipment upgrades, towards games for extra bonus levels, if we decide to hold like some kind of event, all of that goes into like, in general, this is, you know, the fund for people at Duckfeed, you know, to do things. We do not ask for money lightly. We will continue providing as much free content as we have ever produced, which is roughly 24 hours a month across the entire network. So we're not going anywhere. If you decide you just want to keep on listening, that's totally cool. But this is a way for us to just come to you in good faith and in all honesty and say, hey, all of this would make a huge difference for the non-trivial amount of work that goes into making this content. Are you in, or are you still in but just not giving us money? So anybody who does that, it is much appreciated. Check out duckfeed.tv/tipjar. There will be a little image there that takes you to the Patreon, or just do a search on Patreon itself, and there's a funny little video there too.
A hilarious little video.
So is there like a level where if I don't donate that much, I can create like the David Money Smith Endowment for the Podcasting Arts?
It is a little NPR-esque, you know. I can go into the whole philosophy. We did a bunch of time on this on the Bonfireside Chat, like way too much. But like, you know, we want to do this instead of being like, oh, purestamps.com. The same ads that you get everywhere else. We'd rather say, hey, if you want this to be around, go ahead and give us some money, rather than, you know, saying, oh, go sign up for this stupid, useless service, so that we maybe get something out of it. I'm not sure.
All I'm going to say is for $3 a month, we're messing with the space-time continuum to give you early episodes. Like, I don't know how you could ask for more than that.
Well, we record 3 days in advance. All it takes is for me to edit it on time. Oh, okay. Ooh, it's science magic.
There we go.
By the way, I watch all of Rick and Morty, Ben.
Yay! Yeah. Isn't it excellent?
Oh, gosh, it is excellence defined. The episode with the devil's antique shop.
with Alfred Molina doing the voice of the devil. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So I just wanted to get that out there. This has been a really long intro. That is duckfeed.tv/tipjar. Patreon, it's like an ongoing monthly Kickstarter, and you get cool stuff. We bend space and time in a Rick and Morty-esque fashion in order to get you these episodes on Thursday instead of Friday, so you can get a head start on your weekend. But other than that protracted introduction, do you guys want to go ahead and do a normal show?
Let's go.
Let's do it.
Have we ever done an enormous
No, we haven't. That's the joke. It is time for the brief, where we talk about the things that are happening in the world around us, especially as regards video games. Does anybody have a story that they want to volunteer first?
I've got one.
Do it.
Apparently, this year for the X Games, they are adding a new event. ESPN is... the new event is going to be Call of Duty Ghosts.
Ugh. What?
Because clearly that's what you think of when you think of the X Games.
I think of StarCraft because people have died playing that game. That's way more extreme.
I don't know. Like, maybe they're going to rig it some way where people will die. Or like, break their arms, or like, you know, the X game do. I would watch some sort of like weird like post-apocalyptic version of this where the loser's got like fed to the Rancor or something.
Wait, so the wait, you're not doing like a parody article like you do from
No, no, this is actually a thing.
Gross.
Before you cried wolf, but I'm not joking this.
I am still not convinced. I need to Google. Hold on.
I'm just trying to picture like what kind of like endorsements are there going to be? You know, like in Steam, because in the like in X Games, like in all sports, you know, companies will pay money to get their logo on these people. Is it going to be like in the backs of their chairs?
They could scream at them to look happy while they drink it and ask them sexist questions like happened on that one show.
Oh, God. Don't. I had literally just stopped being sad about that, Dennis. And now I'm sad about it again.
Oh, man.
Go ahead.
I wonder, like, the target market of the X Games versus the target market of, like, Call of Duty, what the overlap would be.
You know, it's all, you know, teen youth, hate you, dad. Rap metal.
Humor fuel, yeah.
We're going to listen to some Papa Roach.
It's the two places where shoutcasting could be believed to be a thing.
What the fuck is shoutcasting?
It's very poor regular casting. I don't know.
It's very loud regular casting.
Yeah.
No.
It's what we do, only, you know, kicked up a notch.
I'm just picturing shoutcasting at Hogwarts. It's like Hogwarts for the deaf and hearing impaired.
Wait, wasn't there a band called Shout?
No, you're thinking of the single by Tears for Fears.
Oh, okay. So hold on. Rewind a second. Here we go. Ready? You guys ready? Excellent. It's a podcast about Tears for Fears. I nailed that one, guys. I totally nailed that one.
I had a girlfriend who was like way into Tears for Fears, and it was like in like middle school, early high school, something like that, in the early 2000s, and it was way, way like out of context. It was very bizarre. Huh. That's a good song, you know.
I know. I was there.
Man, that photo. Like, so that photo is making the rounds on all the podcasts, but that photo, David, of our Halo group.
Yes.
The alleged photo.
That is just so.
Wait. I must see this photo.
Oh, I can make this happen.
Excellent.
Do you want to know my comment on that photo that I was too timid to post?
Sure.
Jailbait? ?
That's pretty good. Here, let me send it to you guys, and I'll put it in the show notes.
Oh, man.
But, I actually liked your comment, Cole, because I didn't notice that until you mentioned it. That Nate is the only one smiling.
Yeah, it's a bunch of, like, just awkward, like, thousand-yard stares, like, just indifferent. It's, this could be at least seven different people's, like, last known photograph. Except there's this one guy who's like, oh, I'm smiling from my varsity football picture, like, in the background. But these are the people that we used to play Halo with back, sophomore, junior year of high school.
Do you guys all have candy cigarettes?
Yes.
All right.
What is the print on the guy front and center's shirt? I can't.
That is dogs.
Those are dogs. Okay. Yeah.
He's wearing a silk screen buttoned up shirt.
Yeah. Oh, excellent. Excellent.
Yeah. So that'll be in the show notes. Back before we realized what we were doing was extreme esports.
Yeah. So can I give you another really sad esports story?
Yes.
They're opening up a literal video game stadium.
Where?
In, Henquin Island off the coast of Macau?
Hmm.
I don't know. Which tells me that this
really
is more...
I'm hoping this is like a like 90s era like... action movie island where it's an island entirely devoted to a giant like a arena for video game death matches.
It sounds
like the setting for a fanfic
or like a Bond movie.
Yeah, it's got a skull volcano.
No, Monsieur Bond, I am a gamer. Yeah, but it's going to seat 15,000 people, and which will be the most concentrated group of virgins ever known once it's filled.
So, not for long.
Get them on that island. Yeah. No, it's it makes a certain degree of sense. So the International, which is Valve's Dota competition tournament thing, that is quickly outstripping their ability to find a place to house it in Seattle. So it's kind of like a PAX situation where there's going to be a hard limit unless they go to the Seahawks stadium or whatever. So like that kind of seems like a very inconvenient location.
Yeah, like, oh, we don't have enough room in Seattle. I know where rent is low. Macau.
Yeah, and I say inconvenient with a very Americentric, you know, point of view, right? So, but like, you know, if somebody's, I don't even know where the fuck Macau is, so that is...
It's inconvenient.
It's in China. It's like the Las Vegas of China.
Okay. Yeah, so it's like a seedier Singapore.
I don't know.
Maybe. Where they don't beat you for littering?
Yeah.
I think the world would be a better place if everywhere did that, but...
Yeah, well, yeah.
Oh, just... God. So, sorry, I'm kind of looking at more facts on this as I'm talking about it. I made the joke about virgins. The area that's being developed around the stadium is literally called, straight-faced, the V-Zone.
Yeah. It's an easy joke, but it's still funny.
When have we ever shied away from the easy joke, Cole?
No, never. I think that's what makes us endearing and charming.
So, yeah, it just head-scratching that, you know, Call of Duty Ghosts is in the X Games, and there's a 15,000-seat arena being built. Like, what's happening?
See, strikes me, like, I can understand, like, Dota, stuff like that, because that's something that was set up from the ground up to be, like, let's make a game that would actually be somewhat, you know, fairly entertaining to watch as a sport. I don't understand, like, some of the Call of Duty and stuff like that, particularly in a stadium setting.
I mean, I'm not too terribly down on it, because really the only difference between a game and a sport is whether or not people are willing to watch. And yeah. Like, and you know, the Twitch.tv, I think this isn't my story, but this is related to that, like, covers about 43% of the streaming video traffic on the internet right now. Like, people want to watch it, and so like these kinds of things are going to spring up around it, right? So I don't know, like, I don't necessarily believe, like, oh, there's demand, it must be right that there's supply, you know, or whatever, but like, I just, you know, I, who am I to say what people find entertaining, you know? Like, just, like, where it gets gross is when it becomes like I joked about the corporate sponsorship kind of thing.
Well, I think that, and that's the thing that makes me kind of raise an eyebrow, is you're right, Twitch is huge. People love watching video games, streaming them online. What kind of backwards, out of touch thinking, and you can, I guess, go back to this in 15 years when it's a huge success and tell me how I was wrong, but what kind of backwards, out of touch thinking says, oh, that means that we need to have a stadium? Like, no, the point is that it's working without a stadium. Lean into that and don't try to fix it with these traditional trappings.
True. You know? It is gross when games try to be other things. Yeah. You know.
Well, the other thing I'm wondering, not to, like, whatever about my background, but my family, particularly in the past, really, really into NASCAR. Used to go to a couple races a year. And the thing is, like, granted, it was fun going to the races just because of the culture that, you know, just because of the, you know, kind of the pomp and circumstance.
Mm-hmm.
Not the song, anyways.
Yeah, but it's Lynyrd Skynyrd's version of Pomp and Circumstance.
But in terms of, like, actually watching it, it just didn't work, because when you have cars going 200 miles around a half mile, 200 miles an hour behind around a half-mile track, the only way you can actually watch that is on a TV from an aerial view with, you know, something tracking the cars. Otherwise, you basically just are watching a blur.
So in this case, like, a stadium
I feel like this is kind of the same way. Sorry, go on.
Like a stadium would have the ability to actually put in AV for people to see what the screens are showing, or to have somebody like in a spectator or demo view, like acting as the director showing things of interest, right?
Right, but I guess what I'm saying, though, is I feel like a stadium, I'm not sure it would add anything. I feel like video games, in the same way that NASCAR, just the action that's going on is actually kind of more, works better on TV. Mm-hmm. I feel that video games, similarly, would work better on like a TV / streaming thing than a live situation.
I say this as somebody who's borderline agoraphobic. Sure. But like the notion of like going to an event, going to a game, going to a stadium, you know, going to a Reds game is really fun because, you know, there's the food and there's the people and there's kind of like the general sense of drama inside the room that, you know, puts you in a different like frame of mind. Like, I think that's actually, you know, I might actually defend the going to a location, you know, side
of this. Yeah, I mean, I guess, because, you know, the roar of a crowd when someone drops a pentakill or whatever, you know, it could be fun. Yeah.
You know, the weirdest thing, I've actually been to one mixed martial art event live, and that's incredibly crazy because you would think it would be like, you know, real loud and like cheering and like real rowdy stuff like that. No, it's almost like completely silent. It's really, really weird.
All the crowd noise is added in post, like a Kiss live record. Yeah.
See, I'm not sure if it's that or if it's just like one.
They have two guys mic'd.
Well, or if it's just a thing where it's like if you have the mics literally in the crowd, you hear a lot of commotion, but the aggregate crowd isn't that loud, if that makes sense.
Yeah, can't hear anything over the compensating.
ooh,
sorry. I'm just thinking of Chuck Liddell and people who would self-style themselves after Chuck Liddell. So, yeah. Ben, you're the person who I think has the most experience in multiplayer games. Not necessarily we know that's how you made your fortune.
Now we go to Ben, our multiplayer game correspondent.
I'm just throwing it off because I haven't heard much from you on this. How do you feel?
Well, the one thing that online gaming has that a lot of other mediums don't is that you can, like, with Twitch and stuff, you can comment on it, you know, so you can have a discussion while you're watching it with other people. So it kind of fulfills the dream of internet TV from the 90s. But, yeah, that's the thing that I like about it, at least.
I'm just picturing a live stadium Twitch plays Pokemon where everybody has a controller that's plugged into a central.
Dear God.
Oh, my God.
Or like a little Bluetooth controller like you would have in your college classes to do attendance or whatever. So it's like the clicks forming.
When they randomly pick one, that's fine. But if everybody had control at the same time, that would be so aggravating. Like, because just if two people are trying to do something, it's so frustrating.
See, I would love to see... I think the new esports should be competitive Twitch plays Pokemon. So like, you could even set it up like the World Cup style, where like... You know, like, America would have our, like, we'd pick our, like, greatest, you know, Twitch plays Pokemon team, and then that would go up against, like, Germany's greatest Twitch plays Pokemon team.
Wait, so this needs to be better thought out, because what you could do is just have one person on the team play and just beat it, and then it would just be a speed run, you know? Like, you need some sort of spoiler where... You need to have, like, one person from the other team and then, like, four people trying to beat the game with the one spoiler.
Okay.
You need a bowl.
What if you did, like, Prisoner's Dilemma style where no one knew what anyone else on the team was doing?
I just, if you did
Prison
that, you
plays
know...
Pokemon?
Yes. I predict it would be less than 5 minutes till a fight broke out if you had everyone doing Twitch plays Pokemon in the same room.
That's the only reason I put it forward. I wouldn't float that if I wasn't sure there would be bloodshed.
Again, sort of like NASCAR.
Oh, man. Huh. Ben, you got a story?
I do. Huh. And I even... hold on. I queued it up, too. So. Hmm. All right. So my story will be new tomorrow, but then old by 2 days for the listener. But apparently they're releasing a new version or new... update for the PlayStation 4 software. So they're patching it. And so there are a couple different things that they're adding, one of which is a program called Share Factory, which just makes it easier to edit and watch videos of your games. And so you can basically screen capture what you're playing. You can upload your own music in the background and edit it together. You can mix in pictures of you playing it, like from the camera. And then release whatever content you want. They also have a new feature where you can automatically download games that you've pre-ordered. So you can download the game ahead of time. It just won't be playable until the day of.
Like Steam. And so,
yeah, essentially. And yeah, so I have a little bit of a commentary on this at the end. What else? Yeah, I don't know. Mostly stuff like that. A few little nicks and nacks. But they're releasing that tomorrow anyway, Wednesday, April 30th. But, yeah, no, so I was thinking about this earlier today where it's like, because this is kind of getting into what you've been playing, grinding on. But, yeah, it seems like, because, like, Steam does not cost money to play, correct? You play whatever game you want with anybody, right? You know, it's free multiplayer.
Yeah.
And yet neither of the consoles have that right now. Mm-hmm. And so, like, so I'm thinking that PC seems to be the best option right now of the three.
You don't say.
Yeah. It's been a long time coming, I guess. So you were right, David. Tell your sister.
Yeah,
that's all.
These are pretty neat features. Like the whole being able to compose your own videos and stuff and, you know, record them. Like the Twitch functionality is pretty cool, but like being able to keep whole sessions for posterity and like export them to USB, that's pretty neat.
Do any of you guys watch Let's Play at all? Let's Plays at all?
No, I do not, but I make them.
I watched one speedrun of Dark Souls, and then I also watched a bit of Cole doing his Let's Plays, but other than that, not really.
Some of them are actually pretty... actually, a lot of them are fairly entertaining. Yeah. I think I maybe said this previously, but I still think my favorite one I've seen so far is... I think it's two guys from Rooster Teeth playing Outlast with one guy controlling, like, overall movement, so like the keyboard, the other guy controlling the mouse, so like looking and interacting.
Nice.
Yeah, I find that it pretty much just depends on the host. Good.
Yeah, it's very, yeah.
Maybe this is an area I should know as the resident Sony fanboy, but does PS4 allow you to live stream your gaming, or is it like just capture and upload?
It hooks to Twitch.
Once it's done. It hooks to Twitch, okay, yep. Gotcha.
Yeah, because I do not have a PS4, but I believe one of the things they promised was that you'd be able to give control over to a friend and have them be able to play the game that you were on.
Oh, I remember you talking about that. Yeah,
but
did that feature actually get implemented? I've never heard it mentioned since
after that.
Yeah,
yeah, I don't know that they at one time promised that. I have no way to confirm that though.
Yeah.
I do not have an internet connection right now.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. What?
Yeah.
Yeah. Hold on. Wait.
Okay. I was making a joke about my previous statement.
Okay. Cool. Yeah. No. I think that's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. But yeah. You know. It's. I don't know. This will kind of bleed over into the multiplayer. But I think all the companies have something to prove. You know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just a little bit.
I could see this pre-download actually, in addition to being good for the consumer, also being good for Sony, because it'll probably you know,
space out their bandwidth.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Oh, yeah. That's fair.
Like, it gives people a reason to pre-order it, as opposed to, like, okay, I'm going to give you the money in advance, and I'm still going to have to wait. Like, kind of the cool thing about doing it in advance is, like, I want to play it as soon as possible. So, no, I mean, that's, like, that was a revelation when Valve did that for Half-Life 2, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's also, so I was thinking about it today, because I mentioned in the pre-roll, I've got the new Star Wars pinball tables, which I haven't really, I've played one game on one of them. That's how much I love you guys. I'm doing this podcast instead of playing pinball right now. And you know I love me some pinball. But
you know, they call you the pinball sorcerer.
Yeah. Pinball Jedi, please. I forgot that the game or that expansion was coming out today. Saw a random Twitter headline and was like, oh crap, you know, and was able to go online just on my computer to buy the game through the PlayStation Store through a browser, and then set it to download on my Vita, which was, I thought was really, really cool. But it's this weird, like, they've taken it halfway, because I actually then had to go and turn on my Vita or, like, you know, go and activate the download on my Vita to have it actually start downloading. So any benefit I would have gotten from pre-downloading it was nullified by the fact I had to activate the download on my Vita. So, it is a meaningful step forward for them to implement this, because right now it's kind of this really annoying halfway there, but not really.
I just remember Half-Life 2, buying the game and then having to re-download it.
How so?
When Half-Life 2 first released, like, I guess maybe this has been years, so maybe this was like Steam 1.0. But you know, even if you bought the game, you would then have to verify the entire installation with Valve or something.
Yeah, even if you bought the game physically at a store, it would still take a while to. You know, it added a lengthy extra step to installation.
Huh.
You know, I know I just said that, you know, when Valve started doing that, it was a revelation. However, Steam really, really sucked up until, like, 2007. So.
Yeah, I have no memory of pre-2007.
Yeah, I was thinking about that earlier today. That was a very long time ago.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Dennis, that's because you're a replicant.
Yeah.
Yeah. No!
We put those memories there. You've been dreaming of that unicorn. Here's a unicorn. I made you a unicorn.
Oh, by the way, so I've knocked Chinatown off my list of shame, and I'm taking a big vulnerable step by saying this. Now I just need to knock Blade Runner off my list of shame of movies
no.
I haven't seen.
Sorry, no, that wasn't in slow motion. That was me so anguished that I couldn't speak normally.
Yeah, all those times I've laughed at your Blade Runner joke, it's kind of by, you know, inference and context clues.
It's,
so
you know, it's influenced enough that I wouldn't blame somebody for recognizing it by, you know.
It's not on Netflix, man.
It's not.
It's not anywhere.
It's funny to me that I've never seen Blade Runner, and, like, I'm doing research to try to implement Blade Runner.
Yeah, no. You don't know what can happen, you know.
Well, our next in person hangout, we'll get together and watch it.
Okay, Jesus, people. No, but you liked Chinatown though, right?
Oh, it was freaking amazing! Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah, good. And like every, you know, it was where I felt like I was just keeping up with the movie the whole time. So yeah. I never felt like what the hell lost, but I never felt like it was, you know, like I was guessing three steps ahead. It was, it was very good. So I understand why it's a classic.
Yeah. That's my biggest, you know, thing where it's like, can you separate, you know, the art from the creator? Because Roman Polanski, kind of a piece of shit, garbage human being. However, he made what is one of my favorite movies of all time. So, yeah. Hmm. Can I do my story real quick, and we'll hop on?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So this one's kind of minor, but it really stuck out to me. So you guys remember Ultima Online and Dark Age of Camelot?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, really old. Some of the first MMORPGs, at least graphical ones, back in the late 90s or so. It was kind of a concern because, you know, publishing rights had lapsed and they were shutting down servers, et cetera, et cetera. Turns out that there is a company called Broadsword Entertainment or Broadsword, this is something like that, another publisher. Broadsword Online Games assumed control of the IP and everything else. And yeah, they are. They have listed it on Steam Greenlight, both of them, in order to keep the games going on.
Nice.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So, you know, they're offering both carry a monthly subscription cost, as they do. This article doesn't say what they are, but they're giving 14-day free trials. And yeah, like one of my biggest like bones of contention about, you know, like we're getting so good about archiving, you know, older like static single player experiences. But like you can't, with the exception of that one weird EverQuest server that is locked in 2002, like you can't, we will just lose these games after the servers blink off. Right. And this isn't like an always on DRM kind of complaint. I don't care. But like, it's awesome that there is like another company who realized there might be something to gain by keeping this thing around. Like with we have a smaller overhead.
So how long until we see like multiplayer servers for the original Halo backup?
The original Halo did not have online multiplayer.
Damn it! How long until that thing I said?
How long until our next LAN party?
Well, they did a release on Xbox 360 of Halo 2 updated for that version of Xbox Live.
Hmm. Oh, cool.
Yeah. Oh, and the original Halo, I think, has the multiplayer in Halo, the remaster or whatever, is actually just Halo Reach with different skins. So it isn't the original Halo multiplayer mode.
I want
so,
my pistol.
My well, point that stands.
Well, that was like, what was it, you know, just announced a couple weeks ago or something that, was it GameSpot? Spy Arcade or something's going down,
yes.
And so a whole bunch of games are losing their multiplayer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's pretty crazy. I mean, it's similar, you know, similar worry kind of happened with what was it? You know, Games for Windows Live. You know, Dark Souls on PC notably has you know, all of its multiplayer through Games for Windows Live. I'm not sure if they ported it yet. Like, it's a pretty big deal when these games rely on online services. You know, and EA is, you know, notorious for just shutting servers off 2 years after a game is out. So,
well, and I was actually kind of going to make this semi joke that I feel like the true judge of a company is how they react to the GameSpy Arcade being shut down. So like Activision with like Borderlands 1 and stuff like that, it's like, okay, we're going to port everything to a new system and it'll be all right. Yeah, it's just like, whoop, guess you can't play multiplayer.
I'm just wondering, for these old MMOs, they come back online, everyone pays for their first month, and then realizes, oh, I've kind of gotten used to all the trappings of modern MMOs and this is kind of annoying now. So, you know,
they have been playing it like since then. Like they like most people like those old hangups, those, you know, those old imperfections on those old bad designs on old MMOs.
Well, and like at least for EverQuest it added something. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree. I love OG EverQuest, but yeah. That's my story. I'm, you know,
the EverQuest.
Yeah. Original gangster EverQuest. What's
what's ambiguous about that?
Yeah. Yeah, don't you know what OG means?
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for multiplayer, where we ask you questions and you answer them. Dennis, since you came up with the question here, why don't you repeat it for the nice people?
Yeah, it's the question so nice we posted it twice. basically, a week ago, I started seeing E3 headlines, and I couldn't believe it. I was like, oh, God, that's still a thing. So I thought I'd just take the temperature and see what other people think. So the question was, is the trade show still relevant? And how would it need to evolve this year to hold your attention? Or recapture your attention, I guess.
Yeah. I'll pick up with Christopher Hare, who was one of our OG...
OG
do you need me to wait for a second? Yeah. Okay.
This is now a thing, isn't it?
that David doesn't understand what OG means? Yeah.
You will be mocked.
He says, E3 meant a lot to me back in the pre-internet days. I used to get my gaming news from magazines, and the post-E3 editions were always huge tomes filled with what we'd be playing in the coming year. After the web brought us a constant flow of information from developers, it seemed like E3 lost most of what it had to offer. It makes sense. Why would you spend a ton of money to compete for coverage when you can just pay for a few web guys to come to your studio and have their undivided attention? It's a shame to see it fade, but it's not really relevant anymore. Yeah. No, I totally agree. I mean, that was the big thing, you know, back in magazine and then in like middle times internet days where you could get videos. Mm-hmm. I remember, what was it, E3 2004, 2005, they actually released a set of DVDs. It was 2004 because they had Halo 2 footage on it.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Just like, here are the press conferences. You know, this is the Nintendo disc. This is the, you know, so-and-so. And we watched it at my GameStop. We just, you know, kept it on a loop. And that was like a big deal, like watching those kind of things. But now every game has just such a huge amount of, I'm not saying anything new, so I'm sorry. But like exactly what it is. It just, it sucks because we know everything. It doesn't suck. Yeah. It's great. We know everything. But
I feel like My big thing is, like, after E3, I go on YouTube and search for, like, whatever game I'm interested in, E3 trailer.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is kind of funny, though, because the post E3 issue of a magazine was the fashion week. You know, it was the September, you know, issue, right?
Yeah, the tome.
Yeah. Hmm. David, what's Tim say?
Tim says, I so enjoy cringing my way through the big press conferences each year.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like that's, on the one hand, I feel like the fact that it's become like ultra press conference, I think particularly of last year, where it was like the dueling, like, how much can we hate, you know, the Xbox One versus love the PlayStation 4? I feel like that is some of why it's so irrelevant. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, I feel like it's almost like what we're talking about, you know, like going to a Reds game, where I feel like some of what makes E3 still special is just the hype and just the fact that it's almost, you know, it's a part of video gaming culture. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, I think that just falls into enthusiast and tech culture anyway, because even at Apple press conferences, you know, mm-hmm. keynotes and such, people read live blogs and, you know, watch the live broadcast, etc., just waiting for any kind of new information that could be put out, right?
Yeah, but still, I think Tim makes a really good point. Like, you know, you go to NASCAR for the crashes. And you watch the Oscars to see who shows up, and then just that, you know, horrible looking dress. Like, you know, there, I will admit, I took a certain amount of glee in watching the technical difficulties of the Microsoft press conference last year. Like, it's in that so bad it's good kind of way, or that the Office Michael Scott awkward kind of way. You know, you can find a lot of entertainment there.
Yeah,
maybe that's part of it. Is to a certain degree, video games have arrived in that. It's no longer about news. It's about entertainment.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's pageantry.
Yeah.
I think presentations in general are hard to pull off well.
Really?
And yeah. Yeah.
No, I was agreeing. I wasn't saying really. No. No, you're totally right. I mean, you guys remember the when they were showing, it was a Microsoft press conference, I believe, in like 2008. They were showing Rock Band 2, and it was a live performance, and they had like some dude from like Microsoft corporate, I forget, playing the drums, and he kept on hitting the Microsoft guide button.
And so
they were like playing the Hives like main offender or something like that. And it was like bloop. Oh, God. And they come back into it, like, failing out. I was like, yes. Yes.
There, you had one job.
The awkward sustains me. Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
And then Nintendo every year. Nintendo's not showing up at E3 this year.
No.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Well, they haven't for the past couple of years.
Yeah. Not in
for
particular.
Sure. For sure they didn't last year.
Yeah. They generally hold their own satellite.
Which, okay, hold on. They hold, like, 8 of those every month.
Yeah,
I feel
they've been moving that to it's monthly Nintendo Direct addresses.
I was gonna say it's super frequent now, and I'm wondering how many more Super Smash Bros. Characters they can announce. Like,
generally, it's been accompanied by some good stuff too. Like they, you know, I like the news that comes out of the Nintendo Direct stuff.
Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To answer your question about the Smash Brothers, a lot.
Yes.
Hey, they've got 700 more Pokemon.
Yeah, I was going to say, I want my Pokemon. Really, just give us Pokemon Arena again.
Pokemon Stadium, please.
Oh, yeah, that.
Yeah. Ben, what's
an actual Pokemon Arena. They need to build a physical thing.
Yeah. In Macau.
That I would get behind.
Again, Michael Vick's dog fighter
style giant holograms.
Ben, what's Christopher say?
Chris says, I only hear about it if this podcast or Video Games Hot Dog podcast talks about it. But you all keep me updated on stuff throughout the year anyway, as well as providing us with the occasional drunken person stumbling through sentences. So E3 is pretty irrelevant for me. That's right. You don't get drunkenness with E3 like you do with our podcast.
That we know of.
You know, usually, sometimes they'll have a comedian MC an event, and you can tell that they're just drinking to live.
Dude, Aisha Taylor can only do this so many times.
I have a lot of respect for her.
She's awesome. No, I absolutely love her, and she's done a relatively good job with an absolute shiite, script for her at the E3 conferences. So,
just if you want to watch some choice videos, go and watch Joel McHale. He hosted some event, like not quite the VGAs, but there was like some kind of big event, and it was him. Like he knows just enough to like make fun of all the people. Like he was giving Tim Schafer shit for the Double Fine Kickstarter thing. He's like, so yeah, I took all those people's money and didn't give him a game, huh? It's like, holy shit, you don't care if you're ever asked back, do you, Joel McHale?
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty good.
I feel like this post, though, suggests we have some power. We're not quite, using. If we could get with the Video Games Hot Dog people, we could get people to believe that E3 said whatever we wanted it to say.
Just creating our own, like, alternate reality E3 fan fiction.
Yeah. The W.
No, so here's what I'm saying. We offer our services to the ESA.
I think we should stop and recognize how good of an idea the WW is.
Okay. I didn't hear it. It was so quiet.
W. Yeah.
It's two E's. Yeah. No, okay. So what we should do, so our extended pod family just goes to the ESA and like lobbies them and says, hey, listen, like you need some fresh perspective on this. You know, we're down here on the streets. We know what the Everyman wants. We give it to them every single week. You know, let's just make it happen. Like, put us behind some microphones to like give them what they want, right?
Guys, let's shoutcast the E3 press conference.
just to be clear here, though, the plan isn't that we would actually use our new platform for good, right? We would totally abuse it, right?
No, this is all a scheme to fool Chris Lee.
Okay,
To gaslight our audience.
No, just Chris.
So we're going to target him with a specifically corrupted file every week. Dennis, what's Murph say?
Murph says, I remember being excited about E3. I also remember getting video game news in magazines. At least E3 doesn't show up at my house uninvited and make a mess when my dog rips it up.
Yeah.
Fair point. Yeah. Bygone era.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. Like my enthusiasm for big events like this kind of, you know, is commensurate, or at least, you know, you can correlate it with my decreasing enthusiasm for any stripe of games journalism.
Yeah.
Are we doing games journalism?
No, we're commentary. We're not journal. Like, we're not going out there. We're not presenting facts, you know?
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'll be the one to admit, I actually kind of enjoy the pageantry. I watch I try to watch the press conferences live. And I think there's a part of me that's just longing for that moment. And even if I can just get one moment out of it where it's like, you know, but wait, dun, 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 and then huge reveal. You know, that's, as long as you're willing to deal with a lot of, you know, funny, awkward stuff and non-news.
as long as you're willing to deal in to deal with when things are not funny or awkward. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, take the rest with a grain of salt and then, you know, really enjoy that one big moment that you get each E3. Sometimes there's one. You know, I like watching it.
So are you saying you would describe it as a guilty pleasure?
Ugh, don't. That concept is banned from this show and from all shows I am on.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a, I feel like I've figured out how to enjoy E3.
No, and I'm totally in. All you have to do is go back and listen to last year's E3-ish episode, right? You know, we were excited, you know?
But that was the new console generation, though.
True.
And then none of us
bought any of the systems.
Well, you bought one, but then
I never paid. No money ever exchanged hands. Yeah. So, or no money ever changed hands.
Yeah.
My name is Oh, and I'll round us out with Phil Holmes. I was going to make a case for why E3 was relevant, but apparently not relevant enough for me to answer the question.
This post made my day.
Yeah, that's pretty. I'm just imagining that Venn diagram just showing a little tiny gap. Yeah, no, that's pretty good. You know, and maybe we're a bit of a, I don't know. I've listened to enough podcasts and been doing this for like long enough that I feel I can say this without being too huge of a douche, but like we might just not be the audience that like falls into that, or we may have aged out of when you can really like care about it. And I know that none of us are like, you know, rampant, you know, let's go on NeoGAF and like talk bullshit about consoles kind of people, you know.
Yeah,
like we'll go on here and, you know, talk bullshit, haha, Sony likes Dennis. I swear to God, I haven't been drinking tonight. Maybe that's the problem.
it's the beer pong curve. You know, you need one or two in you.
Yeah, just to take the edge off. Yeah, like we joke about it, but we're just, you know, it kind of feels like a younger, less pod involved person's game.
So well, I think one way they could make E3 relevant again is if they did it all online and all for the public. So, like, if they released, like, demos, like a bunch of different demos of games coming up, like, all on the same day, but only for, like, one day only, I think that could be as exciting as E3 used to be.
Wait a minute. You mean you don't go to Sony's virtual E3 booth in home?
No.
Wait, is that a thing?
Did they have that?
It was a thing for a little while.
Is home still around?
Yeah. You know what? I think that home is primarily a place for pedophiles and people who want to arrange meth deals.
Huh. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like that old saying, home is where the meth is.
Yeah. I mean, maybe home is still a thing.
No, it's still here. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Huh.
Oh, they have both an action district. And wait for it, an adventure district.
Get in line for bowling. You might want to play it in the next 2 days. Yeah.
Both types of music, country and western.
Ben, you get at something pretty important here, which is that, like, what if they did it for everybody? Because E3 is, like, an industry event. Like, it is for press. It is for people who are making games. Like, it is an expo, you know, whereas, like, you know, PAX kind of came and ate E3's lunch by being all like, you totally don't have to have like press credentials to get in. It's just for everybody. And like that is, you know, in the age of, you know, instant information, you know, said the old man, in this information superhighway age, you know, what's important is, again, that spectacle of being there, you know, in a big room watching the John Cusack movie, being there, fuck, it's Say Anything. Being There is... I always get those two mixed up. Damn it, damn it, damn it.
It's okay, man. It just takes
don't
happen.
Worry, Cole. You can say anything and the audience will believe you.
I suppose. No. Say Anything is John Cusack. And Being There is... what is that? Ionia Sky? Fuck. Different decades, too. No, it's Peter Sellers. Shit.
You know, Cole knows all the random trivia that no one else knows, and then he gets mad when he messes it up when no one would have gotten. Maybe Ben would have. Be like, yeah, that thing. Ha ha.
Yeah. I wouldn't have believed him that way. If he would have put somebody wrong and Say Anything, I could have caught him on that.
Yeah. What was the John Cusack movie with Bobcat Goldthwait as the what was that Say Anything? Oh no. It was one where he where it was one of those quintessential 80s movies where it ended with a boat race.
Was that boat race set to a montage by chance?
No. Let me see here. No, Ionia Sky wasn't Say Anything, so I attributed her to being there as well. God damn it. Why do I always get those two mixed up? It comes up more often than you would think, actually.
Does it?
But back to this, PAX is cool because people can go there and play games, and you know the actual developers, you know, and you know, like indies will, you know, play into that, and you get to see weird small things.
See, I feel like the other thing, the other approach would be sort of kind of the TED Talk approach, where like TED Talk itself is, you know, notoriously elitist.
Notoriously bad. Good.
Well, but I mean, like, but it's, you know, at the same time, though, it's very much set up for, you know, the eventual streaming on the interwebs to normal people.
I mean, what you're talking about is just GDC, except GDC is for the people who actually, like, make decisions and push code. Like, the idea of let's take this and, you know, actually present conversations. Like it would be like if they made the game postmortems available for the public, as opposed to just people who go to DC.
I feel like I would watch the hell out of some GDC keynotes. No. Are those available to the public? I was going to say.
Yeah, you have to have attended it, and GDC is a very, very expensive proposition. So
I want those keynotes made just available, you know, for me to go watch.
Yeah.
Like a TED Talk.
Even a couple years out of date, you know?
Oh, yeah, sure. Sure.
Yeah. Huh. I don't know. Does anybody have anything else they want to say about this? Because I feel like we've gone around. Ben, how about you?
No, I mentioned the one thing about they should just release downloads.
Yeah.
That's about it.
Yep, just making an event. Make it like, okay, this is the big demo day. You're like, we announced it. Go here and check this out. You know, download the trailer, you know.
Because with like current, like they didn't have this ability like 10 years ago where they couldn't reach everybody who had their consoles. They can do that now, you know?
So they should use the dashboards and the connectedness for good as opposed to trying to market Doritos to people.
Yeah.
Wait,
what kind of Doritos? Good. That sounds good. Yeah.
Doritos, Tacos Locos, Doritos.
Oh, that sounds delicious. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait, did you say Four Locos, Doritos?
No, Doritos, Tacos Locos, Doritos. They are Doritos that taste like Doritos Locos Tacos. I don't know how much clearer I can make it. Oh, man. So, yeah, thank you, everybody, for responding to that. That was the multiplayer section. If you would like to, you know, throw in and just, okay, so what I want you guys to do when you respond, just think, what movie is Cole going to throw a title in on? And just write it down and then see if you're right. It's a fun little game you can play. If you guessed Being There or Say Anything for this week, I don't know, high five, I guess. But that is at facebook.com/TheLevelPodcast. And those generally go up on Tuesday afternoons. Yeah. Neato, guys. Let's talk about games we've been playing.
The grind.
Time for the grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing. Does anybody have any new business? I have
so much new business.
Do it.
There was a flash sale on PSN. I just got started on a bunch of stuff that I meant to start. So, God, I'm just going to list off several games that I've been playing, and you guys, I'll pick like two of them to talk about this week. Because I've been playing Retrograde, the music game uses the Guitar Hero controller. I've been playing Tokyo Jungle at the recommendation of Ben. I've been playing, obviously, lots of Dark Souls 2. I've been playing a little bit of Crash Team Racing. I've been playing Everyday Shooter. What else have I been playing? There's at least one or two others that I'm forgetting. I've bought but not started playing Crash 3 Warped. I'll tell you what, I'm going to theme it. I tell you guys you have choice, and then you don't really have choice, just like Mass Effect 3.
deep cut.
I'll theme it after music this week. I'll do Retrograde and Everyday Shooter.
Okay.
So, this is now how Dennis' thought process works, the podcast. So, Retrograde, actually, I saw a little bit about it when it came out, and I'm like, oh, great, an excuse to use my Guitar Hero controller, and then forgot all about it. And then, busted back out my Guitar Hero controller when I saw it was on sale for 99 cents. And it is a great use of that piece of plastic that's been collecting dust. I really, really enjoyed it. So I played the game through on medium and beat it. And honestly, I did that in probably about an hour. Like, it's not a lot of game if you're just, looking at time spent on it. But now I'm kind of ramping back up to the more expert levels. And it's proving really tough. So the idea of the game is that you start by beating the final boss, but you accidentally set off an explosion that starts rewinding time. And you have to kind of replay all your actions in real time to match everything you did, or else you're going to disrupt the space-time continuum and destroy everything, much like happens if you get a free episode early, or an episode a day early through Patreon. So, but basically the notes in Guitar Hero, which would typically be scrolling down the screen, are your cannon fire or your lasers. And so you have to move your ship to the correct position and strum at the right time to fire the right laser. So it's kind of like playing Guitar Hero, only you're playing Guitar Hero in two directions at once. Mm-hmm. So this is all to the beat. This is all to music. But at the same time, your enemy's lasers are coming back through towards them for when they fired it. And you have to make sure that you are not in the lane that those lasers are when they pass you. So not only do you have to be in the right lane at the right time to strum the note, but then you actually, even if there's not a note that you're strumming actively, need to be, out of the way of these notes coming in the other direction.
Mm-hmm.
So does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah. It makes more sense if you look at a video of it.
Yeah, that'd be an easy way to do it. It sounds super unintuitive, but once you kind of get into the rhythm of the music, it flows really, really well. And you feel like a badass when you pull, just like, in Guitar Hero, you feel like a badass when you pull off a section perfectly.
I mean, it's a fantastic concept.
Yeah.
Does it feel a lot different than a Guitar Hero or Rock Band or something like that?
It does, and I think it's because it gives you, at its core, you're doing the same things. You're pushing buttons with your left hand and you're strumming with your right hand. But it kind of gives you a new set of visual cues around those things. So you kind of have the muscle memory built up for how to do these things.
Sure.
But that muscle memory is very ingrained with the visual cues from Guitar Hero. And so what Retrograde does is says kind of like, let's take that knowledge and then force you to kind of develop a new dialect of that language, which is really interesting. And it gives you the feel of kind of learning to play Guitar Hero for that first time without, completely having to erase your memory. So,
because that would be bad.
Yeah, yeah. That would be a bad thing. So yeah, it was well worth the hour that I put into it so far. And like I said, I'm it's tough. Like, I'm in that weird stage where I haven't played Guitar Hero so long that I am not good enough to really survive on expert mode. But I remember being good enough to be frustrated and off put with the learning curve that I'm going back through.
Yeah.
Like, so jumping up to the hardest mode, it's like, I should be better at this than I am. And like, there's not that, I'm learning kind of zen to it. So, yeah. So that's frustrating. The other thing I'll say is that the music is no great shakes. So yeah. It's there to give you a beat. and kind of give you some audio cues for what you should be doing. But it's, you know, I would never listen to it on its own as a soundtrack, which is unfortunate. But like I said, as a game, it's a ton of fun.
Yeah.
So it's not like covers of like actual songs.
No, I think some dude mixed it in his basement or something. And I don't want to put down something that people have put work into. It's just kind of generic electronic music.
Yeah.
Is where it seems to fall.
Yeah. The story, not so much of this game's creation, like the creation's pretty interesting, but just kind of what happened afterward. So this was primarily the creation of Matt Gilgenbach, and the game sold incredibly poorly, like really, really bad. And that actually really took a toll on him, and he just basically went into a, you know, depressive, you know, hole, essentially, wondering, you know, what am I on this earth to do, etc. And here recently, as you know, as recently as like in the past year, he successfully funded a Kickstarter for a survival horror game called Neverending Nightmares that has a very unique like pencil drawn art style that is somewhat inspired by those episodes, and it looks really good.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, when you make a game that uses the Guitar Hero controller, you are limiting yourself automatically to that audience. Like, no one's going to buy a controller to play this game.
Does it straight up require it?
Oh, I can't imagine playing this game without one. Yeah, there's no way. Like, you can play Guitar Hero with a regular controller.
Yeah.
But why would you?
Mm-hmm.
Same deal here.
Yeah.
So I can see how this would sell really, really poorly. Even though it's a really, really unique experience and very creative use of that piece of hardware.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cool. Tell me about Everyday Shooter.
Yeah, so Everyday Shooter is another kind of, small indie game that features music. It's your basic twin stick shooter. So it's kind of weird. Like, you are literally a pixel on the screen. Which took me a second to get used to. Like, the avatar for your ship is incredibly small in relation to everything else, to the point where you can almost lose it when it gets a little bullet hell-ish. but, you know, you fly with one stick and you shoot with the other. And everything in the game that you know, shooting or hitting makes a sound.
Mm-hmm.
And that sound is all kind of organically worked into an overall composition. So there's kind of a basic music track playing in the background, which is usually kind of either acoustic or electric guitar. Very catchy stuff. I like all of it. Unlike Retrograde, in Everyday Shooter, I would listen to this music on its own. It's just very fun, catchy, simple stuff. But then, you know, it gets all these layers on top of it as you are defeating enemies or dodging shots and stuff like that. So it's got this great flow to it, you know, where you can kind of just play and zone out a little bit and you're listening to pretty music and everything is very bright colors. And it's a great game to kind of space out and lose yourself in.
Do you ever play Geometry Wars?
No, but I've played Super Stardust.
Okay. Very similar.
Okay, yeah. So where Super Stardust is feels much more intense. This one is more laid back and more of that kind of flow experience. The interesting thing for Everyday Shooter, and I don't know if it's this way for Geometry Wars, is that every level has a different set of rules around what constitutes a combo. And so to get a good score, you have to kind of figure out how to make combo chains for each level. So for one level, you know, there might just be a specific period of time that, you know, combos are available. The other level, it might be that, there's a special enemy that you kind of hit them and that starts a chain reaction, that sort of thing. But none of it's explicit. You kind of have to experiment and figure out, like, oh, wait, I just got a huge combo. What did I just do? Like, wait, how did I earn that? And then you kind of learn the rules for each level.
Keeps it fresh.
Yeah, it keeps it very fresh, and it starts you off with a very small number of lives, so you can only, you know, get through the first couple levels, and you can unlock more starting lives and get deeper and deeper into the game, which is a nice way to kind of gate progression and kind of reward getting better at these earlier levels without feeling too harsh.
That is kind of neat.
Yeah. So it's a beautiful little game. Like I said, the art is very, very bright and unique as well, and I like that. Aside, they really slacked on the ship. I don't know why that bothers me, but the avatar for your ship is just so bland and tiny.
It kind of looks like
literally it's a dot.
Yeah, and it might maybe it's because I'm on the Vita screen, because I think the image for the game has like a little box spaceship type of thing, but what that translates to on a 5-inch screen is a pixel.
It kind of looks like an asset that would be included with Game Maker.
Yeah.
And I realize that's kind of, you know, like sick burn, bro, but
no, it's true. The guy knew where to focus his attention, right? It's on the music piece of it.
Yeah.
And you know, everything else is window dressing. So music games, fun stuff.
Cool. I like that theme.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So what do you think of Tokyo Jungle?
Yeah, we have to dip into that.
Oh God, that is a whole nother obsession. I love it. It's great.
Did you play as the Pomeranian?
Oh hell yeah, I played. That's one of the only things available to you. I've done Pomeranian, the deer, the chick, which was interesting.
Yeah.
Especially when you like try to critical hit a lion with little chick. It was one of those famous like oh shit moments where, you know, with the Pomeranian I didn't get very far, but every animal I'd been able to get one of those lock-ons on, mm-hmm. and do a critical hit, it was a clean kill. So I just thought that a critical hit was an automatic kill no matter what you were.
Yeah.
And that worked when I was a chick attacking a bunny rabbit or a chick attacking, you know, a Pomeranian. When I was a little baby chick and I was like, hey, I got a lock on this lion. Sweet. This is going to be awesome. And then it like did no damage to him. It was like critical hit. Ha ha. And he turned around and just one shotted me. like, oh, my, oh, okay. Okay.
I'm just not realizing why this went on sale around Easter.
Oh.
Gotta get those rabbits. Yeah.
Did you, Can't you actually like pay to unlock some of the more weird things, like one of those robotic dog toys from the 90s and stuff?
It looks like there is. I've seen silhouettes of velociraptors and the like. And then there are some paid content. Like there's DLC for the game.
Yeah, so I think it's like you can either play the game to unlock it or you can pay to unlock it.
Well, no. I think there's a ton of animals that you can unlock naturally, and then there was an expansion pack at some point of animals that you have to buy. You can't unlock. So, yeah, but which is fair. Like, you know, it is an expansion, not, you know, pay gating stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hmm.
But yeah, I've the furthest I got was with a gazelle, I think.
Yeah. Okay.
And it just starts getting really interesting and kind of survival horror-esque when you're like, I just want to get to this next objective, so I'm going to dash to this area and I'm fully toxic and I just need to make it and I'll let half my herd die off just so I can get through to where I, you know, it's just really interesting.
Yeah, so, they start amping up the struggle aspect of it. Yeah.
I've seen nothing like it, which is a good thing.
Hmm. And then you're playing as a Pomeranian getting chased by Pyramid Head.
Yeah.
Somebody drew it and masturbated to it.
Yeah.
Dropping truth bombs.
Yeah. Furry Hill.
Yep, again, somebody drew it and masturbated to it.
Yeah.
We live in a terrible, terrible world. Ben, how about you? What you play?
So I sat down this weekend, I curled up to my TV, with intentions to play Metro Last Light, which I got with my month trial of PSN, mm-hmm. only to find out that they revoked my privileges.
Since what?
There's the catch.
Yeah. So unbeknownst to me, the full game went to a demo version, So I no longer have access to that game. Same thing with my copy of Poker Night, which I had played previously. Mm-hmm. It is now a demo, and so all the things that I unlocked are no longer there.
Boo.
Yeah,
that's the catch, is that you only get full access to the games as long as you're in PlayStation Plus.
So if you re-up, like if you subscribe again, Do you get your shit back? Or
yeah, you get everything back, and to the point where I think I had a free trial of PlayStation Plus like right when it came out. Mm-hmm. And downloaded some. It was like a Magic the Gathering game, which was one of the first things they had on there. Forgot all about it and was just going through my archives recently and saw it was there, and I could still download it and play it. So, but yeah, you do have to be in. So, if you want to be cynical, it's like you're just paying for an extended rental.
Yeah,
I cry foul.
So is that really it? You had best laid plans and nothing?
Yeah. I was going to name drop also the game 2048.
Oh, 2048? Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think we've talked about that.
I've talked about threes.
So how did threes work?
That's the same. It's a tile game. You press a direction and tiles fly in and likes match likes, and except, you know, threes goes up in powers of three. 2048 goes up in powers of two.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's like two different classes then, or like two different tracks you can follow?
No. Just like the they were games that were developed at around the same time that had very similar kinds of things. But go ahead. Explain 2048 for the nice people.
Okay, so the way it works is, you can swipe in any direction. All the tiles will slide in that direction until they hit a wall or another tile. If they hit the same tile, the two will merge and become the next power of two higher. If they're different, they stay separated. And so the goal is to get to the number 2048, which is 2 to the 11th power.
Right.
So you have to combine, you know, whatever. And so the reason why I want to share it is because I got to 4096 after one of my coworkers got there to kind of, I don't know.
Whoa.
Yeah. So I was in slightly deep the past week trying to do that. So anyway, it's a fun game. It's a very casual game. So I feel a slight tinge of shame talking about it.
But, you really ought not to, because it opens up the door to talk about Doge 2048.
Oh,
where
my.
Where instead of numbers, it's Doge pictures.
It's also a presidential campaign.
So is there any way to distinguish which one's greater between the Doge pictures?
You just have to remember. So that's the extra little wrinkle.
That's tough.
The answer is that all Doge are great.
All Doge are greater than everything else. Yeah. Oh,
and then also there's Flappy 2048.
Uh-huh.
Which you play as a tile with Flappy Bird Fist 6, and each gate that you go through increases your power. It gets like ridiculously big. It doesn't gate you at all, so it's
like casual game diarrhea soup. Yeah.
Aww. Don't say diarrhea soup.
You should have that impression, because that's what that is.
2048 is a good game.
How did Flappy Bird just become the Angry Birds so fat? Like, there's Flappy Bird on everything.
I don't know, just because shit's awful.
Yeah,
because, we discussed this.
Because when the man, by which I mean literally a man, tells you can't have it, then you have to have it.
No.
Yeah.
Just capture the zeitgeist, you know. Just, you can't explain it.
So
why even bother trying?
Flappy Bird yet?
I'm sure, like, should Trench Run. Like, Flappy Trench Run. Use the up button, Luke.
Yeah. Use the tap button, Luke.
Yeah.
God, that would be a much more boring movie.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, that was my only game accomplishment. But, however, in light of our recent discussions, because I knew that I needed to start playing games since I'm on a games podcast. So this is kind of my source of frustration. And I hinted to this earlier, is I don't really want to buy a new console yet. Mm-hmm. And after considering like the ramifications of console, I don't know if I really want to buy a console in general. Like, I don't want to have to pay to play online. Like, I think that's I kind of feel the same way about that as I do with like PSN, where it's like, I don't want to have to be continually on the hook to a company in order to enjoy games.
Yeah.
So I think I might be heading down the PC path, maybe.
Yeah.
But we'll see what happens. But in any case, as we were doing the podcast, I purchased, if I can't look forward, I'll start looking backwards. So I purchased Bioshock 1, which I do not own, but I've played. And hopefully I'm not spoiling the spoiler cast, but in preparations for doing a spoiler cast on Bioshock Infinite.
Only a year late.
Yeah.
You know.
That's a special flavor the level brings to stuff. We let it percolate first.
Yeah. And I also got Dead Space 2 because I played the first one and got off the train there. But,
yeah, got off the tram there.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah.
But, because the engine went down and I had to fix it.
But, I mean, the second and third one, they both got solid reviews. So,
the second one's great.
Yeah. All right, so...
Was the third one well reviewed?
No, it reviewed like garbage.
Oh.
Was the third one good, I guess, is another question.
I have no idea. It didn't review well, but...
They did co-op, and that told me that you have lost the plot. Like, oh, it has co-op, so I know it's bad. Good.
I mean, the second one's just a straight-up action
Resident
game.
Resident Evil 5 was awesome.
Yeah, well, fair.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll be curious to hear what you think of Dead Space 2, actually, Ben.
Okay.
Neat. Let's see here, just in relation to the flappy stuff. I'll go next this time. So wait, you know, basically since we last talked, there was Easter, and then I've been working pretty much nonstop on this Patreon stuff. So in terms of being able to sit down and actually play games, not really been able to do that. However, I've had plenty of opportunity to do mobile things. So I've continued. I was working to try and get all gold medals or all gold stars in Flappy Golf, and then they added superstars, and I'm trying to think about. So it's basically just it's a lower par count, you know, in order to qualify for that. And like it's cool because like it doesn't require you to go. I just checked back, and it's like, oh, like half of my holes have superstars because I just undershot it or overshot it or something. You know, which is fine. But that's a fun game. Like, I actually really enjoy it. I wish that there is a way to pay to get rid of the... and maybe there is, and I just haven't looked hard enough. A way to pay to get rid of the ads. Because it actually does... It'll just pop up like a big ad for blah, blah, blah. Some shitty free-to-play looking thing. And then it'll take me over to the App Store. And it's really, really disruptive.
Has anyone... This is a... I don't know if it's just my phone or what... Has anyone noticed that there are websites you go to that just after like 5 seconds or whatever will kick you over to the App Store without you obviously having
it's ridiculous.
Clicked on the thing?
Yeah.
Like, is that a thing?
Yeah.
Yep.
That needs to not be a thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a thing on every platform. And it's just, it is, they need to find a way to fix that because there's already, like, you know, like Android has a little bit of a way to, you know, do some ad blocking, but not entirely, like, you know, preventing that. And just, yeah, it is something that is killing the experience because you have no idea if a site's going to do it, you know, or if you can trust the site to not do it.
Yeah, like, I'll look at a banner ad. That's fine. I'm still in control. The second you start doing shit on my phone without me telling you you can, it's not okay anymore.
Right.
All I want is functionality to just tell the phone to never take me to a mobile site.
Yeah. Nope. And it's always going to look and see your user agent and then shunt you to where it, you know, wants to go because advertising dollars are sold against, you know, what people are expected to see. It's a whole big shitty game where, yeah, I don't know. But yeah, Flappy Golf is good, minus the ads, and I just haven't looked to fix that. Continuing the mobile kick here, I will have to say Hitman Go is amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I alluded to this a little while ago. Like, it was just an oddball news story. But this is the turn-based tabletop Hitman board game kind of thing that has a very, like, understated, sleek look. Like, everything looks like miniatures. Like, miniatures in these really kind of, like, nicely designed scale models of areas. And, like, so, like, the missions are based around Hitman Blood Money. And yeah, it's like it's really good. Like you move from like spot to spot, and guards have different behaviors. You can hide inside of a plant or so. And then facing is taken into account. So, like, if you move into a spot and a guard is going to move onto it, like, if they see you, they can, you know, knock you out and you restart. But if you can get the jump on them, you can take them out. And each level or stage has different requirements for, like, oh, beat it in under this number of turns, or beat it without killing anybody, beat it without, you know, or grab the briefcase. When you kill somebody, like, your target, it plays Ave Maria, like in the main games. You know, yeah, no, it's fantastic. There's a lot of game there too. Yeah.
How many levels?
I think that it comes with like 5 out of the gate, but each level, quote unquote, like each mission has, you know, 10 or 15 like individual stages inside of it. So it's pretty meaty, and it's, you know, I respect that. It's kind of like, yeah, this game is $5. Pay $5 like an adult to have it, you know? And yeah,
I have a thing. You give me money for the thing, and now you have the thing.
Yeah, that's the way it's worked forever. Yeah, no, it comes very highly recommended on my part. I feel kind of goofy because, like, it feels like everybody has been talking about it, like, just in listening to a bunch of podcasts, and, you know, because this is a week or two behind, I don't know how much more I have to add to the conversation aside from the fact that, you know, I can generally look past presentation, like, you know, a bad presentation. However, a good presentation just adds so much, and this choice, it feels like saved them money. You know, because they didn't have to animate. You know, there could have been like a really gross over animated version of it. It's just very simple, sleek, understated, kind of has like a mod look to it. Yeah, it's great.
And so this is the same company that makes the normal game, correct?
This is Eidos Montreal. So okay. I'm not sure which one it is.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep. And let me see here. The last one is Hearthstone, which I just kind of fired up last night.
Oh, God, how are you here talking to us? I've heard that game is deep, deep, deep waters.
Yeah, no, it's pretty good. So this is the electronic card game that Blizzard puts out. It's, like, set in the World of Warcraft universe or whatever. And it has mechanics that are kind of like Magic a little bit. Like, every card has an attack and a health rating, and there are various, like, you have mana counts, and there are special effects and stuff. It's really, really good. I can take or leave, like, the humor or the dialogue. Like, it's kind of like, oh, yeah, this is what Blizzard does. It's not really my flavor of stuff, but, you know, I can see that. But just as, you know, in terms of, I've really only gotten through the tutorial. It does a very good job of kind of, like, easing you into the mechanics. And, you know, something that bugs me about, like, card games, it's just, here's your deck, fight against this deck, go ahead. Whereas in this, it actually has a single-player mode with campaigns and stuff.
Huh.
And so that's pretty cool because I like, you know, card game mechanics, you know, like that little, you know, that little bit of randomness, you know, along with that little bit of, you know, decision-making, you know, to where you can really kind of tell, you know, that, like, you know, like what you put into it and whether or not it was successful. Yeah. It works very well. I have some quibbles with you know, the presentation. I'm not in love with Warcraft's, like, art. You know, mm-hmm. like, I like the in-game, you know, like, the way their models look. Like, you know, the actual way that World of Warcraft looks. But, like, the actual, like, drawn-out, like, characters just look kind of gross and over-designed to me a little bit.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Like, in the
that
actual flat 2D art.
Kind of a Blizzard thing.
Yeah, yeah. It's just not my usual things. I wish that the cards were better, like, nicer to look at. But I guess you can't have everything. But the interface does a really good job of conveying all the information that I would want to have conveyed to me. However, like, some stuff just looks like garbage. Like, it's not optimized for a Retina iPad screen, so it's just, like, jaggy and compression artifacts all over the place. It's a mixture of 2D and 3D in a very, like, obvious and obnoxious way that just causes performance hitches, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but the iPad definitely feels like the way to play it. Like, I couldn't imagine sitting down and playing it on, like, a desktop or a laptop. But, like, laying in bed last night, I was like, okay, I'll fire this up because I've had it downloaded forever. And it really kind of sucked me in. Yeah.
Do you know if they have plans to put it out on iPhone?
I'm not sure. I wasn't sure if it was a universal release alongside it or not. I know that it's free. Okay. Is it free on Mac? I'm not sure.
It is. My understanding, it is
free for everyone except Mac.
And I've only seen it on iPad.
Yeah, it's PC, Mac, and iPad. Like, if you're curious about the game, like, I would say, like, check it out. on Mac and just see how it works for you. I'm not sure. I don't know. There's probably a way that they could do it on the iPhone, but it's nice on that big, you know, glass screen to play it, you know?
Sure.
Yeah.
Do they have like expansion packs or something?
Haven't gotten it and haven't played around with it. I know that, you know, it's free. Like, you just download it and you play it. It has in-app purchases. I think you can buy extra cards. Like, you just buy a deck, which comes with, like, a character, which I think might come with new single-player content. I'm not sure about multiplayer, either.
So that seems real cheap to me.
What does? Like, selling decks?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a card game.
See, yeah, but just, I don't know. I feel like that just seems a little bit... The point of a card game is building a deck, not buying decks.
Yeah, I mean, that hasn't been the case for a long while, though. Like, even in Magic, from my understanding, and I never was that active in Magic, like, there are just decks that are canonical that you just buy and run.
You know? I mean, yeah, you generally, your entry to the game will be buying a deck, but I don't know.
Yeah. I just, for my understanding, like, in the, you know, high-level tournament play, like, you just have the kind of deck that you play. And it's kind of like, oh, here's this. Like, you know, like, everybody kind of gathers from it. Yeah.
Go ahead. A lot of people play one of the more popular tournament games is Draft, which is basically, like, you get, like, 10 booster packs and then as many of, like, the basic resources as you want and then have to make a deck and then compete with it.
Yeah.
I think that's cool.
Yeah. But. No, deck building, I have a terrible time with it just because I get, you know, decision-making paralysis. That's why I never got too much, you know, too much deeper on Calculert, just because it does require you to make those kind of decisions. I like that this just kind of gives you something. I'm not sure if this gives you the option to, like, shuffle your decks around and play it. I don't see how that wouldn't be a thing, especially because a big portion of Hearthstone's appeal for a lot of people is the daily challenge kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so... I mean, maybe you buy the decks and you just get access to those cards. And so that is their way of having them give you money to support this thing.
Yeah, I know the it wasn't a daily challenge, but the Magic game, weird that I haven't thought about it for forever, and I've referenced it twice tonight. But the Magic game had a series of challenges that were more puzzles. So it's like, here's a situation, now you have to use the resources we give you to solve it. And like it wasn't randomized. There was a specific set of steps and moves that was the quote unquote right answer. Mm-hmm. But I thought that was really cool.
It was like trick magic. Yeah. Some kind of magic trick.
Was it like and one magic?
What? Oh yeah. Sorry. Whoa, that is it. Jumping back to 1998. Huh. I appreciate that, Ben. Good job. High five.
I'm getting you a trophy.
Yeah. I like the idea, David, that you propose of, you know, like just shuffle and you get a randomized deck and then you, for that game, have to make it work. And then you get a new randomized deck at the end of that. It's like,
right.
You know, when I was a kid, I loved to draw, but I hated coming up with things to draw. And so I was, you know, like, hey, you know, what should I draw? And I'd always want people to give me suggestions or give me an assignment. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how I think about that whole random challenge thing. That's why I like the daily challenge and Spelunky and stuff like that. Yeah. But there's just something nice about having a having it handed to you that way. It's like, okay, here's the set of constraints I'm going to work with, rather than, like you said, Cole, having to build your own deck and kind of I'll get paralyzed to optimizing things.
Yeah. Yep. I agree with you there, Dennis. It's nice to have that that starting point, you know. And I'd be telling tales out of school if I said, "Oh, there's totally an option to build that," but you know, like to get under the hood. But
yeah.
I don't know. It's neat. It's a nice little like side diversion, and I would totally rather play this kind of game on a computer just because it keeps track of score for you, and you know, it just. You know, you don't have to deal with the problem of having physical things.
Which you don't have to do math.
I understand. Ooh. Well, yeah. No, I mean, like, that's why it's, you know, it's nice to play, you know, Ticket to Ride on an iPad or an iPhone because it tabulates the score for you in real time. Like, scorekeeping is the worst part of Ticket to Ride, which is a very fun game otherwise. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then
so have you been playing Ticket to Ride?
No, no. It's just that is just a game that I'm kind of always playing. So
I did not know this. I am surprised by this.
Why? Yeah, it's a good game.
Yeah, I know.
The iPad version of it is great.
You just think you know a guy, and he drops Ticket to Ride on you.
Yeah. Finally, this isn't terribly new. I don't have a lot of new information to add, but Rocksmith. Again, oh, still, yeah. Yeah. I need to get you your cable, Dennis. I just need to put it in my car and then just drive it to you.
Yeah, we need to see each other in person. Which for people who live literally 5 minutes away from each other,
that's my problem because I'm a fucking shut in. So,
my only advantage is I have a gym I go to once a day, and then otherwise I'm here.
Yeah, so it's still good. I'm still it's still spooky. I'm waiting for a Steam sale on the DLC.
Did you say spooky?
Yeah, no, that is the word that I've been using for it since the beginning. It's spooky how well it works.
Oh
yeah,
I see what you did there.
Yeah, no,
it's actually a survival horror guitar game.
Oh yeah, there's some of the DLC. The custom DLC is a Akira Yamoka tracks from Silent Hill. It's pretty fun.
The market is ripe for it.
That's the direction I thought you were going to go when you're talking about the guy who made Retrograde and then got depressed and then started making another game. It's like, oh my god, a Guitar Hero. I've thought about it. It could be fun to have some sort of guitar controller elements in other games, but I digress. Continue.
Well,
I mean that one Devil May Cry game, you had a guitar as a weapon, right?
Yeah, sure. I could see an RPG where the battle mode, like your random encounters would go to some sort of Guitar Hero thing. So you'd play with a regular controller, and then when it came time to battle, you'd pick up your axe and go to work.
You're literally describing something that was proposed for Brutal Legend and then abandoned, but also an April Fool's joke for World of Warcraft. Uh-huh. They proposed a bard class that used a Guitar Hero controller.
I feel like the actual joke of the bard class is that it would have been much more interesting than anything they've done for the last three expansions.
This is back in the 2008, when Guitar Hero was relevant still. Yeah. There's a lot of DLC that I want, but I feel ridiculous dropping the $3 per track. Because I have a whole text file list, which would actually, if I bought all of them at full price, would be hundreds of dollars.
Yeah.
In DLC, and it regularly goes on sale on Steam, so I'm just waiting for that to happen. But I don't know. It is cool, and it is markedly improving my guitar skills. So gets a thumbs up from me, David. How about you?
I've been, I don't know, this has kind of been the week for me just continuing to play things.
Mm-hmm.
I've, been continuing to play Elder Scrolls Online. Mm-hmm. It continues to be good. There's one section where you kind of stumble into a pocket realm of Oblivion, which is, kind of their version of, I guess, hell. Sort of.
Yeah.
And the game kind of switches over to sort of channeling Dark Souls a little bit, which is really cool.
Okay.
It's, it's this area is basically taken over by talking crows.
Ooh.
And it's all, everything's the, the Dark Souls-esque, kind of pseudo misty, that kind of look. So that was kind of cool. I'm still playing Fallen London. I just had a really, really big, I completed one of the story segments and it, revealed a huge section of the story that, ties in a whole bunch of the, mysteries and, what some of the characters' motivations are and, some of what's going on in the story as a whole. So that's kind of cool.
Hmm. This is tangentially related to Fallen London. Have you played any good story Nexus games?
Other than Fallen London?
Yeah, other games that people have made that have been, related to were in that milieu.
I have not. I mean, they made one called like Blackthorn or Black something. And it was like made by the same company, but it was written by like some other guy who's a writer. And I don't know, it was very, very surrealistic, like just straight up, like just weird.
I'm looking at one that looks really interesting called Sunless Sea.
Oh, Sunless Sea is actually that's like the pseudo expansion / sequel to Fallen London. So it's same universe, but it's kind of made to be kind of a steampunk, you know, you're on a ship, but the gameplay is sort of similar to like FTL.
Okay.
Although it's real time. And yeah, it's same world, same art style. It looks really cool. They're really pulling in like, you know, the entire thing takes place in a giant underground cave, so like your lighting on your ship and stuff is a big thing. So yeah, that comes out like sometime in May.
Okay. Yeah. I just the only reason I asked, like, I've had it in my head. I've got ideas that of like Twine games I would like to make if I ever get time ever.
Sure.
And I could see that just like, oh, like what would happen if I took that over into Story Nexus? But
yeah, I mean, it seems like a really good thing. Like I said, the only one I messed around with was one that was incredibly just weird surrealism, and it never convinced me that its story was ever going anywhere enough to make me deal with just all the weird. So. Yeah.
I like weird, so it's hard for me to put myself in that position.
Yeah.
I can understand that, and it seems like that platform is entirely, you know, meant to encourage weird too. Like
weird would be drawn to it.
Good.
And then the last thing I just I'm kind of now going through my backlog, except it's my backlog that will still install on a Mac.
Mac log.
Yeah, you know. My Mac log. I installed Max Payne 3. And I'm not sure if I've talked about this at all yet. You know, it's still Max Payne, but you know, Rockstar has a hold of it, so it's the production values are a little bit higher. Which is kind of cool. I really like they've done a lot of work with the animation. So, like, if you do, like, a diving, like, you know, diving shoot, you will then, like, stay on the ground and sort of, like, it, you know, until you choose to stand up, you can complete the gunfight sort of, like, you know, shifting around on the ground shooting people. Which, it's, you know, very well animated, which is kind of cool. I feel like it's also kind of got, you know, Rockstar's a little bit of their, like, social commentary edge to it.
Yeah, it's Rockstar.
Which is kind of not nearly to the degree that, like, Grand Theft Auto does, but a little bit. I also really like that they've kept the, like, overdramatic, like, film noir type feel to it.
Yeah.
My favorite thing, I don't know if you guys have played any of the Max Payne games, but whenever you choose to exit the game, you're like a normal game would have, like, do you want to exit, yes or no? In the the Max Payne games, it'll instead the message will be like, you know, the rain fell down like 1,000 broken dreams on the city streets. And then your options will be like, you know, but the pain was too much. I couldn't keep going or, but it was too late for me now. The only choice was to press onward.
I,
So everything in the game is completely done that style.
As much as
emotionally traumatize you before you leave the game.
Yeah. Yes.
And you just take a chunk out of you before you go. As much as I like that style, you know, when it comes to the interface, just kind of say quit or don't quit. And don't make it like, are you sure you want to quit? Confirm or cancel? Like,
yeah, I think for that, I think in this game, that is only here because, you know, when the original two Max Payne games went, you know, that was still just what games did, and mm-hmm. it's since become kind of a trademark of the series. So I don't think they would have done it if it hadn't been in the previous games.
Yeah,
it's a shout out at this point.
They had every reason to fix that terrible interface problem.
I don't know. I really like. I mean, the opening dialogue is, you know, is really great. You know, it starts out with you about to like kill someone. You know, execution style. And there's just this whole monologue about, you know, oh, they pushed me and they, you know, they paid to have, you know, some angry, you know, turn me into an angry murderer and say what you want about Americans, but we understand capitalism. Like, there's just this whole, like, you know, like overdone, you know, melodramatic dialogue to everything. It's really enjoyable to play. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the premise is he's getting boozy in Rio de Janeiro, right?
And so it's basically and this is probably my one complaint about the game is the first two games kind of are, you know, as Film Noir tends to be, you know, his life just kind of getting destroyed and him being burnt out. But mm-hmm. the end of the second game and, you know, kind of the later half of the second game is sort of about him overcoming that, you know, coming to terms with, you know, what's happened to him and stuff like that. And I don't like that they kind of just retcon that, ignore that.
Yeah. But
plot line is basically, that he's kind of washed up and become an alcoholic because of all the horrible things he's experienced in the first two games. And so he's come to Rio de Janeiro.
Nailed it.
Yeah.
One take.
Make my job easy.
To kind of, you know, this is supposed to be like his easy job, just, you know, taking care of rich people.
Because nobody's going after rich people.
Well, you know.
Taking care of business class.
Taking care of businessmen.
So, and, you know, of course, someone gets kidnapped and he proceeds to go on a rampage. So basically, this is Man on Fire.
Totally yada 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 the wrong part.
Yeah, you totally did.
So it's basically him being a crazy alcoholic and Rio de Janeiro. I'm a little disappointed that they don't like pull a the couple of levels in Saints Row where they would actually make you deal with the fact that your character was drugged up and trying to do a gunfight while like stumbling around. But
yeah. Neat. I'm gonna pick it up the next time it's on sale, I think. I've got like my Steam wish list is ballooning with all these games that I am now able to play because I have a PC.
Did you ever play Max Payne 2?
Not 2, no. We played the first one for Watch Out for Fireballs, and then I'm kind of like, well, I think I've experienced everything Max Payne has to teach me, so I just haven't paid attention to it.
I at least personally, I thought 2 was much better than 1. It's much easier and it's easier. Basically what they change is that your bullet time regenerates over time. Mm-hmm. So instead of it being like, it basically becomes kind of this puzzle game, which is like, how can I use bullet time to like best you know, kill everyone in this room in an awesome John Woo-esque way.
Yeah.
And then the storyline is very cool. They really double down on the Twin Peaks references.
Hmm. Well, that's the in show or the in game show, right?
Right, but like in the previous game, they like mention it once or twice, and it's just kind of a thing. Whereas in this one, it's basically every level, there's one or two episodes of it, and it directly parallels what's happening to you in the level. And mm-hmm. then significant portions of the... Basically, in the game, you keep coming back to this funhouse that's based on their, like, Twin Peaks thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so you'll be having, like, gunfights through this funhouse.
Hmm.
And it's really well done. It's really, really cool.
Fun fights through this like... gunhouse? Go ahead, yes. Ben. Sorry.
Do they have anything like that in the third game?
I have not gotten to that yet. I'm really hoping, like, that's a little bit a hallmark of this series is, you know, that every so often it goes off the rails and just has, like, a random, like, you know, just random in-game things and random, like, drug trips and, you know, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really hoping, The other thing the second one does is your events from the first game have apparently been turned into a action movie. So you'll see ads to it that one both, you know, they're both used to kind of provide commentary and, you know, sort of subvert what you're doing, but they also point out some of the like flaws in the first game. So like. One of the things is in the first game, the character model is awful, and your character at all times has this like horrible grimace on his face.
Mm-hmm.
And so, when you're like tripping out, and like are reliving the events of the first game, you make a comment that, you know, I have a constipated look on my face that I just can't change. So it's, you know, kind of self-referential a bit.
Yeah. So I was rearranging my tabs here, trying to get everything for the outro put together. I was paying attention, but I came across a thread that I had open from earlier referencing people's favorite stuff from The Onion.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. And the reason I was chuckling earlier was because of this headline: Dad's new 20-year-old Thai boyfriend sucks at scattergories. I know, like, that is bad form in podcasting just to read a headline from The Onion and present it, but like that is a great headline.
Yeah.
Sorry.
That's actually going to be our next show on the podcast. You know, Cole reads headlines from the
and people react. Let's talk about why this is funny.
Analyzing humor is always a good idea.
Yeah. Why is this headline funny? Undergraduate student. It's pretty good.
Lies and deception.
Yeah. Is that all, David?
Yes.
Cool. Let's bun it up.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
You're not even asking today.
No.
Oh, now you are.
I'm telling you. Right? Now you care.
The credit.
You like the status quo, but you don't like supporting it. It's a very complicated relationship. So that was level number 59. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening. We talked a lot about the Patreon at the beginning, but as you are, approaching your weekend here, you know, this first month is going to be very important. So check out the rewards that are there, and if any of them tickle your fancy, it really would help out. Like, if every single one of you gave a dollar, then, you know, we would have a lot of money and be able to do a lot of cool stuff.
The Scrooge McDuck vault and go swimming
and break our necks. because that's not how solids work. Yeah, I mean, it sounds like super shilly. It's what everybody says, but you know, like, it does make a huge difference. And you know, we're talking about doing more spoiler cast kind of things, and we want to make sure everybody has the games. And you know, David's microphone is always crapping out. I need to send him a new microphone. Those are, you know, there are concerns, right?
This is really an adopt a graduate student hour, actually. Yeah, yeah. support a graduate student.
Well, no, but like, it'd be really cool to like get you guys some money for doing this. You know, it's like, yeah. So regardless, we will just you going there helps us do cool stuff. And the shows will always be free. Don't worry about that. At the very least, check out the video. Cool. What else is there? Check out the Dadening. That is duckfeed.tv/thedadening. And in kind of the same vein, in the time since our last episode, I put out a new Hex Crank, just a shade under a decade too. All right. It's about
you're rolling now.
What do you mean?
Well, there was I forget which one in particular it was, but you kind of were stopped up on it for a bit. Now it feels like they're flowing pretty well.
I just had the one. that one was about Uninvited. I really like that article. Trying to decide if I'm going to finish Waxworks or not because it's real, real bad. Yeah, I don't know. It's getting to the point where I feel like it's a very bad use of my time trying to play it. And I'm very sensitive to how I spend my time.
Is this the one where they kill Paris Hilton?
You know what? I think you're thinking of like the Wax Museum, maybe.
Okay.
House of Wax.
There we go.
I was gonna say that's worth anyone's time,
I suppose.
Oh. So the show's taking an anti-Paris Hilton stance. I'm not saying that you should support it, but it just
seems too easy. Yeah. Well. Yeah, so all of those things, and then, you know, like we said, back in the multiplayer, we have a Facebook page, and the iTunes ratings and reviews never hurt. So, did I miss anything, fellas?
I wanted to throw out one thing. I forget who posted it on the level. I think it might have been Jala, but the story about the E.T. games being dug up in New Mexico?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh,
that's a thing.
Yeah.
It totally is. I am so, so sorry, you guys.
Don't let the story get buried like the E.T. games.
People get so excited about that. I don't care.
I think it's funny.
It's, I don't know. Like, it's just been the subject of, like, jokes and jokes and jokes ever since. And I kind of just want, like, show me the tapes kind of thing. Because, like, it's been done before. Like, there have been hoaxes where somebody just goes out in the desert where they buried some ETs and dug them up. Like, I hate to be an ET truther, you guys. But, like, and the fact that it's, like, affiliated with Microsoft, too, and it's, like, production companies, like, and it's getting all this. Like, I'm so skeptical. I don't know. Not to get, like, real or anything.
My innocence has been crushed.
Yeah.
Loose ROMs.
I think I'm going to start an E3 truther.
An E3 truther.
Website.
An E3 truther.
E3, wow. Robbie. Okay, let's butt head up.
Oh, man. But in the meantime, I need to ask you guys, all you true believers out there, watch out for loose ROMs. Oh, wait, no, shit. I totally forgot to do the sign-offs. My name's Cole Ross. I'm at Cole Ross on Twitter.
Oh, they knew who we are. I'm Dennis Fury. You know where to find me.
But I want people to follow us on Twitter.
On Twitter somewhere.
You know, you're at GrabMoneySwiss777. We have to keep it. You're at DFury on Twitter, Dennis. David, you're at MoneySwiss777.
You start over, Cole. We'll do it.
No, okay. I'm Cole Ross, at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I'm Dennis Furia at D Furia on Twitter.
Normal. We have to keep
I'm
it normal.
David MoneySmith at MoneySmith777.
We have to keep it normal.
I'm Ben Merkel at Merkelizer.
And loose ROMs.
Yeah.
What were you murmuring in the background?
Yep, I was murmuring we have to keep it normal.
Wow.
Definitely normal.
No, up until you said loose ROMs, Ben, the title was Prison Plays Pokemon. So... And I don't want to have a Twitch Plays Pokemon joke as our title in May. So
see, I was hoping for E.T. Truther as the title, actually.
I like Lose Rouse because it's like a couple of degrees off.
Yeah.
Right. No, I agree. I support that.
Yeah. Cool, you guys. I need to go to bed.
I need to go to bed, but I'm going to play Star Wars Pinball instead.
Whee!
I love that wee sound you made. Make it again.
Whee!